The following sermon is presented by Maranatha Bible Church of Comstock Park, Michigan. For more information, go to mbcmi.org.
It is a joy this morning to have Frank and Roberta Curtis with us. Many of you know them. Frank and Roberta have been supported missionaries of Maranatha Bible Church for many years, and it's been a privilege for us to partner with them. And they were here in Grand Rapids for a number of years. Is that true? And we're here at Maranatha for some time? And then sent out and are currently ministering in Utah. They are former Mormons, and God graciously drew them to himself and helped them see the true news, the good news of Jesus Christ. And now God has called them back to Mormon country to be able to tell people the good news of Jesus Christ. And they are planting a church in Morgan, Utah. And it's hard. It's a hard place, but they are being faithful, and we are rejoicing in how God is using them. And it's a privilege to have them come. We don't just have them come every year because it's a nice thing to do. We have them come every year because we believe in their ministry, and we are convinced that God is using them, and church planting is really the essence of biblical missions. And so we're so grateful for Frank and Roberta and our partnership with them. We consider them an extension of Maranatha Bible Church. They're not just some people out there that come and give a report every once in a while. They are really an extension of our family. And so it's a joy to have them with us this morning. Frank's going to come and bring us the word. So, Frank, come and let's give them a round of applause for their welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you. Roberta and I always look forward to the time we get to come and spend a weekend with you. We wish we could be longer. But you know how that goes. Life is busy. So, but we do look forward to the time. We also appreciate the fact, and we consider it a privilege to be a part of the missionary family of Maranatha Bible Church. So, in fact, we were talking today. It's been 25 years since we left. We were here between 80 and 83. Went back to Utah in 83. So it's been 25 years as of June since we were here at church. And but thank you for your continued and very faithful part in our ministry. We appreciate it very much. Thank you for the groups that come out. Thank you for everything you do. I mentioned last night that one of the big steps we recently took was that we have a building of our own now. Rather than just renting a place on Sunday morning for a couple of hours, we have a place downtown, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We have a big sign up, and so it's just a tremendous blessing. And you guys had a part of that. We sent an email and just said, hey, can you pray about this? And you guys sent money to help us get into that building. So thank you. Thank you for your prayers. And thank you for everything. Let's go to the Word. That's a little more important than what I have to say. So let's go to the Word of God and see what it has to say. The message that I want to share this morning really came about as a result of some things I was thinking about really several years back. But anyway, several years back, I was preaching through the book of Romans, and we were talking about the relationship of the Christian to the government. We were looking at the issue of the cross and the flag and how the church and politics relate to one another, how we can change our society. What is it that we are to do as believers to change our society? And at the same time, I was asked to preach at a missionary conference with the theme, Untold Millions. So as I was thinking about what to share at this missionary conference, what I came up with was, what is it that we're supposed to tell these untold millions? As we go and we tell people, whether it's, you know, somewhere else, some other third world country or some Europe or wherever it is, or right here at home, what is it that if there are these untold millions of people, what is it that we're supposed to tell them? You know, what is it that the Bergens are supposed to tell people when they go down to Louisiana? Last night there were several people from the camp. What is it that the deans and others are supposed to tell people as they go to Camp Aokaya? And what is it that we're supposed to tell people in Utah? What do you tell your family members? What do you tell your coworkers and your neighbors as you have opportunity to tell them about what Christianity, what Christ is really all about? When we think about the free fall of society, what is the answer to the society's ills? Is it moral activism? Some people would say so. Is it the virtues of democracy in the American way? Is it the need for morality or self-esteem or health and wealth? Is it felt needs? Should we spend our time mostly dealing with what people think they need to hear? Well, the purpose of the message isn't to create any kind of controversy. It's rather to identify our message and then encourage each one of us to share it personally and to help others share it around the world. Because if we believe the message, if we realize the message is powerful and that it can change lives, that it can be effective, I think it motivates us to share it. If we really don't believe it wholeheartedly, and if we really don't think it's going to change people's lives, why bother? I ran across a quote. This is from a guy named Randall Terry. Many of you might remember his name years back. But he said this. He said, "All of our gospel preaching hasn't stopped. A tidal wave that threatens our very survival. We have more churches, more gospel radio, gospel television, gospel literature, gospel tracts, street meetings, evangelistic crusades, gospel music, and yet America is fast becoming the moral cesspool of the earth." And that's the quote. Now, this is the author, and I believe it was Erwin Lutzer's book that I got this from. But this is what Lutzer says about that. He says that Terry thinks that Christians continue to cling to an inadequate solution for this nation's moral and spiritual ills. He cannot understand the inconsistency between the amount of gospel being preached and the meager results being realized. What has gone wrong? Lest we be tempted to conclude that the gospel is not the power of God unto salvation, I would like to suggest that what often passes for the gospel is not really the gospel at all, but rather a message distorted by popular culture. The fact is, this man is wrong about the gospel being widespread in America. Preaching might be widespread, Christian book sales might be on the increase, and the media might be expanding religious programming, but is the gospel really all that widespread in America? And Luther says, I think not. Just listen to much of the gospel preached in America and you will find the themes of popular culture, a belief in the essential goodness of man, and the goals of happiness, wealth, and health. You will hear a gospel that is rife with stories of miracles based just as much on the power of the human mind as the power of God. You will find a great emphasis on spirituality, personal fulfillment, and openness to other belief systems. What you will not find is a clear proclamation of the depravity of man, the holiness of God, and the urgent need for us to humble ourselves and approach God through Christ's sacrifice alone. And I think Lutzer hit it right on the head. You see, the gospel, or the message that we need to share, is the cross. It is a clear proclamation of the Word of God that's needed, and especially as it is centered around the cross of Christ. If you turn with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 1, we have what is probably a very well-known passage on the gospel, on the message of the cross. We're not going to really delve into it too deeply today. The message, the purpose of this isn't so much to exegete or exposit this passage. It's just to look at some observations from this text as we consider what it is we're supposed to be sharing with people. Okay? So let me just read through that very quickly. It says in verse 18 of 1 Corinthians 1, "For the word of the cross is to those who are perishing foolishness, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the cleverness of the clever I will set aside. Where is the wise man? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world through its wisdom did not come to know God, God was well pleased through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believe. For indeed, Jews ask for signs and Greeks search for wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, to Jews a stumbling block and to Gentiles foolishness. But to those who are the called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. Because the foolishness of God is wiser than men and the weakness of God is stronger than men." This passage really, as we think about the difference between what we see preached so often and what the Word of God calls us to preach, we want to see four problems with man's wisdom. Because the problem with so much of the preaching is that it's not God's wisdom alone. What we do is we take man's wisdom and kind of interject it into the gospel and we try to pass that off as God's truth. And it is partially true, but it really doesn't go down to the heart of the matter. So we want to look at four problems with man's wisdom, then look at a couple of reasons why it is inadequate to God's wisdom. First one is that it is incompatible with God's wisdom. Verse 18 is really the main statement of the passage, and the rest kind of explains it. And it says, "For the word of the cross is to those who are perishing foolishness, But to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. Man rejects the message of the cross because they call it foolish. And the word there is the word we get moronic from. Really, to mankind, the preaching of the cross is moronic. That's basically what it's saying. Man hates the message of the cross because it really hits him where it hurts. First thing the message of the cross does is tells us that we're sinful. Then, to make matters worse, it tells us that we're helpless. So first we're sinful, we're bad, we're sinful, and then we can't even help ourselves, we're helpless. But men love elaborate and complex religions because it feeds their ego. It offers the challenge of understanding and the pride of doing something about it. But the cross crushes our pride. The cross crushes the pride of men. He spells out the problem specifically in verses 22 and 23, and he says, "For indeed Jews ask for signs and Greeks search for wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, to Jews a stumbling block and to Gentiles foolishness." To the Jews it was a stumbling block. How could someone whose life ended on the cross be the Son of God? How could a common criminal, that's what they did with criminals, they killed them on the cross. How could someone whose life ended on the cross possibly be the Messiah? You see, they wanted to see a sign. And Jesus did a lot of them, the biblical ones, the ones that were prophesied in the Old Testament, but he didn't do the ones they wanted. If you remember the story of Jesus' temptation, when at one point Satan challenges him to jump off the pinnacle of the temple. There was a very common held belief of that day that the way the Messiah would introduce himself is that he would come floating down into the temple grounds. Just kind of materialize out of the sky and come floating down into the temple grounds. Man, talk about a way to start a ministry. He would have had everybody believing he was the Messiah. And even the religious leaders may have, for a little while at least, gotten behind him. But he didn't do that. See, he did signs, it's just not the right ones. And then the ones that he did, he didn't advertise. He told a lot of the people, hey, after he healed him, he said, don't tell anybody, just go back home. Go talk to your priest or go do that, but don't make a big deal out of it. So to the Jews, he didn't fulfill the signs and he was a common criminal. So to them, he was a stumbling block. To the Greeks, he was an offense or a foolishness. I mean, it didn't make any sense to them that a God would care for man. If you've taken Greek mythology in any of your classes, probably the main aspect of a Greek God was apathy. They could care less about the people. Their lives were a soap opera, and all they could care about is what was going on in their life. And that you couldn't possibly believe that God cared so much for us that he would send his son to die for us. And that's not what a Greek God did. And even worse than that, it was too simplistic. They were enamored with eloquence and rhetoric, and it didn't matter so much what you said, it only mattered that you said it well. So here's a Christian preacher with their simple message, and it seemed very crude to them. Why would you want to do that? I mean, it's silly, it's crude, it's you don't say it well. It is something simply to be laughed at and ridiculed, not something to be respected. Today, sometimes we face the same issues. The spiritualists want a sign. They want something to happen. They want a miracle. They want a healing. They want some kind of a sign. They want a visitation from someone or a miracle to happen in order for them to believe. Scientific people want proof. They want knowledge. They want some sort of technology. So today, science and the experts tell us one thing, and they are accepted rather than the Word of God. And the problem is that's infiltrating the church. Not that we totally reject the truth, as I mentioned earlier, but what we do is we take the world's wisdoms and we Christianize it, thus baptizing it for our consumption. And then it sounds good if we just add a few Christian words to it, but it's really man's wisdom through and through. Man's wisdom is incompatible with God's wisdom. Another problem with man's wisdom is that it's impermanent. 19 and 20, it says, "For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the cleverness of the clever I will set aside. Where is the wise man? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world?" You see, God will do away with man's wisdom. It does not last the test of time. Go to the self-help book or self-help section of a bookstore. See 50 different ideas. Go back another year later, you see 50 new ideas. New self-help ideas. Why? Because the ones didn't work, and then so they have to come up with some new ones. Remember back to some of the theories that we heard in our youth about evolution? They're all gone. Some of those charts you remember, Cro-Magnon man and all the ones through that, okay? We've been reading through a little devotional book at dinner time, and we ran across this just the other day, and I just thought I'd share it with you. And this is what he says. It says, "It is now universally accepted that Piltdown Man was a hoax. After appearing in textbooks for over 40 years, it was a scientist outside the field of paleontology who exposed the fraud. Nebraska Man was based on a single tooth that turned out to be a pig's tooth. Java Man was based on a skull fragment and leg bone found 39 feet apart. The evidence for Rambopithecus was a handful of teeth and jaw fragments that were pieced together incorrectly by a man named Louis Leakey and others to resemble a human jaw. Rambopithecus was an ape. A growing consensus is coming to acknowledge that Homo habilis is really bits and pieces of many different creatures and never really existed. And the Australopithecines has an even more ape-like appearance. Detailed computer analysis has shown that their body portions are not intermediate between man and ape." See, all of those that we had, I know when I was growing up, are all gone. They're all been debunked. But you know what? They come up with new ones. And every new theory that comes up now is put forth as absolute truth. And that's the problem with man's wisdom. It is impermanent. It is not, or it is temporary. It is not permanent. Third problem is that it's ignorant. Verse 21, "For since in the wisdom of God, the world through its wisdom did not come to know God, God was well pleased through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believe." It's ignorant because, and it's inadequate because it rejects the ultimate truth or reality of God. In fact, man's wisdom is incapable of coming to know God. Isaiah chapter 55, you probably know this passage as well. Isaiah 55, starting at verse 8. "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." See, it's ignorant. We can never really, by our human unaided mind, come to understand who God is and what He's doing. We can't. We can't do it. Corinthians tells us that the Spirit of God, because He has the mind of Christ, enables us to understand those things that are spiritually discerned. But apart from that, we are totally incapable of understanding the things of God. So the word of, or the man's wisdom is ignorant. You know what we often do with God? It's not that the church denies God. It's that we put Him on a lower shelf, as it were. As you think about, you know, all the things that you believe, and maybe God is up on the top shelf, but what happens is we don't like a God that we can't understand. We like a God that we can figure out, like a God that we can put in a little box and kind of so we can understand Him. And so He still might be on the top shelf, but the shelf is way lower than it ought to be. He's not way up here all by Himself apart from every other creation. We just put Him right there on the top. And so we have all kinds of theories that kind of a milder, tamer God is the God that we're after. Open theism. Recently in the church is a classic example. Some people were having trouble figuring out how God interacted with us. And so they came up with a theory that made Him less than what He really is. And it's really just an attempt to try to for us to understand God a little more, but really it's not what God is. It's just trying to make a milder, tamer God. So the word, the man's wisdom is ignorant, but it's also impotent. Knowledge has exploded, yet mankind is no closer to its goal of peace and harmony than it has ever been. MacArthur said this in a book. He said, "We are more educated than our forefathers, but we are not more moral. We have more means of helping each other, but we are not less selfish. We have more means of communication, but we do not understand each other any better. We have more psychology and education and more crime and war. We have not changed except in finding more ways to express and excuse our human nature. Throughout human history, wisdom has never basically changed and has never solved the basic problems of man. We can't solve our own problems because we won't recognize their source, which is sin, nor its solution, which is a heart changed from within by God. Man's own evil nature or own sinful nature is the problem, And we're powerless to change our nature. And even if we see that the problem is selfishness, we have no way of removing that selfishness. And if we understand that hatred causes misery and pain, there's no cure for that hatred apart from the message of Christ. Now, fortunately, we are not left to our own power, and we're not left to our own wisdom. We've seen the problems with man's wisdom. Now let's look at all that is right with the message of the cross. All that is right. And we're going to see that the preaching of the cross is the power of God. It's the power of God. It's not incompatible with God's wisdom because it is His wisdom. It says it is His wisdom. And it is not ignorant because it doesn't deny God. It assumes Him. Nowhere in the Bible do you see God trying to prove that He exists. First verse in the Bible, in the beginning God created. Didn't try to prove that He was around. He's there. He just assumes the existence of God and just goes out and proclaims it. But I want to look at two other truths that we mentioned. The first thing is that it is permanent. You see, God's wisdom does not change. You can't improve on perfection. And God's wisdom will bring real change and change that will be eternal. All of history looks back. Or looks forward rather to the cross or back to it. And what will be accomplished through the preaching of the cross won't only be for 1 year or 10 years or 100 years. It will be for eternity. You know, we deal with Mormonism out in Utah, obviously. One of the things that Mormonism is very proud of is that they have continuing revelation. Now, they look at us as inferior because we only have one book. They have four. And not only do they have four books, they have a modern-day prophet who continues to receive revelation from, they say, from God. The problem is, new stuff doesn't always agree with the old stuff. So they say that the new supersedes the old. Now, while on the surface, this seems pretty neat. You know, our message is 2,000 years old. Theirs is 2 days old. That's better, right? That's newer, better, improved kind of stuff. But if you think about it, it's pretty scary. What is subject to change and what isn't? Is the way of salvation itself subject to change? What if you do it one way all your life and you get to heaven and God said, you know, I got thinking about it and I changed my mind? It's not by grace. You know, it's this way. It's pretty scary. But in reality, we don't need new stuff today. We don't need any new revelation today because what God has given us in the Bible is permanent. It doesn't change. It's perfect. It's the truth. And God's truth does not change. And not only is it permanent, it's also, in this passage, it is powerful. Verse 23 through 25, "But we preach Christ crucified, to the Jews a stumbling block and to Gentiles foolishness, but to those who are the called, both Jews and Greeks, the power of God and the wisdom of God. Because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men." Verse 18 tells us that it's the power of God, and so does verse 24. And the word used for power here is the word from which we get the word dynamite from. And it speaks of inherent ability to perform any task. The word dynamite, it's that inherent ability of whatever it's talking about to perform its required task. This isn't a message about the power of God, but it is the gospel of Christ is itself the power of God. It's not just good words to live by or advice that tells people how to live their life. It is the power of God that changes lives. Romans chapter 1, verse 16 and 17 says, "For I am not ashamed or disappointed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the righteous man shall live by faith." Sometimes you hear a message, a very powerful message, and we say it's dynamite or a very dynamic message. The message of the cross is, as it were, the dynamite of God that is able to break the hardest heart. It is able to change the most destructive life. It is able to do what it's called to do. Verse 24 tells us that Jesus Christ and the message of Jesus Christ is the power of God, and He is the wisdom of God. And to the world, the cross seems to be folly, but nowhere is God's wisdom more clearly seen. At the cross, sin was defeated. It revealed God to us, and it did something that man's wisdom never has been nor never will be able to do. Let's just apply this and then we'll be done. Humanly speaking, it doesn't make sense to do a lot of things. It doesn't make sense to have the Bergens go down to Louisiana. There's lots of people down there. There are maybe moral people, a lot of churches. It doesn't make sense to have a bunch of people go to Michigan and have a Bible camp. I mean, this is the Bible Belt. You know, why do you need to have a Bible camp in the middle of the Bible Belt? That's kind of silly. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make sense to send a couple of people to Utah, to an area which is very moral. Very moral area. 93.6% churched. There's a church on every corner, almost, it seems like, in some areas of Utah. Why send a couple of people out there to labor for years to get a church going when there's already a church on every corner? It doesn't make any sense to send people to the Mideast to witness to Muslims and even see fewer people come to know Christ than might be in Utah. It doesn't make sense to go into the jails and, those people deserve to be there. They belong there. Just let them pay their price. Why send people into jail to witness of Christ and to try to see lives change? It doesn't make any sense to witness to your neighbors and co-workers and risk losing friends and risk losing respect unless what you have can change things, unless what you have can change people's lives for eternity. You want to know what makes witnessing and what makes mission make sense? It's the power of God operating through the message that we have. Different languages that people share in, different places, different cultures, but it is the same message, it is the same power, and it's the same God. Back in Isaiah chapter 55, just continuing to read in that passage, starting at verse 10, "For as the rain and the snow come down from heaven and do not return there without watering the earth and making it bare and sprout and furnishing seed to the sower and bread to the eater, so shall my word be which goes from my mouth. It shall not return to me empty." Parable of this, the seeds and the sower. We're responsible to scatter the seed. We're responsible really to scatter the seed. One of the things that Roberta and I are not are gardeners. Back in Provo, we had the worst ground ever. We couldn't grow zucchini in our garden in Provo. Now, you know, so we just figured it was the ground. Now we're up in Morgan. We have a really nice garden. It's really black. It's really good dirt. But the only thing that we can grow well are potatoes. But everything else is a little suspect. And it's our fault. We understand that. We're not much gardeners. But you know what? We never, even though we tried in Provo and didn't work very well and tried sort of successfully in Morgan, we never reaped anything when we didn't plant. There were years in Provo we just gave up and we had this really nice vegetable fruit stand and we would just go and buy them. We just figured that's a lot cheaper and a lot easier than having to try to do it ourselves. You know, we never reaped anything. We never harvested anything that we didn't plant. Our job is simply to sow the seed, to plant it, to spread it out there. Missions and witnessing make sense because our message changes lives. It changes heart, it changes eternity. And I believe that most of us, if not all of us, want our lives to count for something. We want to make a difference. You know, when we leave this earth, we want it to be different. We want it to be better because of the time we spent here on earth. Sharing the message of the cross here and around the world makes a difference for all eternity. And I believe it counts for everything. And I also, may I say, it is worth anything. It's whatever it takes to share the message of the cross is worth it because it changes lives. It changes eternity. And that is why the message of the cross is what we need to share. Sure, we can help some people with some different things, telling them, you know, if whatever it is. But we're not going to really change their lives for eternity unless we share the message of the cross. What a privilege to know that we can have a part of that. So whatever it takes, whatever kind of sacrifices we have to make to enable us to share that message is worth it.
You've been listening to a sermon presented at Maranatha Bible Church in Comstock Park, Michigan. where we exist to display God's glory, declare God's truth, delight in God's Son, and disciple God's people. No part of this digital file may be reproduced or distributed without prior written consent. For permission, go to mbcmi.org.